Hey, folks, thanks for tuning to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and here with us today, we have legendary writer Darren Watts. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. For any of our listeners or viewers who might be unenlightened or maybe just came out of quarantine, could you give them a brief survey of your credentials in the industry?
Well, I used to be the president and owner of Hero Games. We published Champions, among other things. I was the boss for the fifth and sixth editions of it. I also used to be the president and owner of Indie Press Revolution, which is a sales collective for small publishers who have difficulty getting into distribution, you know, the way that it's set up. I got out of the owning things business a few years back. I don't own either of those, though I'm still on good terms with them, and I occasionally do create products for them. I also have written as a freelancer for Star Trek and Doctor Who and a bunch of other places.
Oh, cool. Well, good to have you back, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And my co-host today is Christopher McLaughlin, the head creativity czar at Ghost Show Press. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
All right. It's always a pleasure to have you on, sir.
Absolutely.
So we're here to talk about Darren's new project, which is, correct me if I get the name wrong, Explain This Comic Guys. Am I right?
Yep.
And we're talking about all of the quirky, interesting history of the comics industry. And you guys are going to be going live in the near future on the Damocles Thread channel on YouTube.
Right.
And you'll be on Podbeam as well, but you're not live yet, right? We're generating shows.
We are not. We have just started. We did the first two episodes of it basically as a proof of concept, right? It was like, I've been a guest on dozens and dozens of different podcasts, but I've never run one before myself, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if I was going to like it. But I have been, you know, kind of pestered into doing this with a couple of good friends. Steve Tasker is my co-host on it. And so we did a couple of episodes to see if they worked, to see if there was something that we felt like should keep going. And we enjoyed doing them so much that we've, you know, pretty much committed that this is going to be a thing. And we are now writing. We don't want to go live with it until we've got at least five or six episodes up. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to actually kind of have an interesting amount of content before we actually put it out. So we will probably go live with it sometime mid to late next month. I would say sometime in May it's actually going to go live. And by then we will have five or six good episodes up. So each one's about 45 minutes to an hour on each one on a separate topic of something interesting and weird from the history of comics.
So all of us who are starved for geeky entertainment during quarantine while the publishers are shut down, this is something to check out coming in just a couple of weeks. So that is
absolutely
definitely
good news. Well, that's kind of why we're doing it, because I've suddenly got some extra time on my hands too. So I kind of, you know, we've been threatening people with doing this for a while. And so, you know, now that we all kind of have extra time on our hands, it's kind of time to put up or shut up about it. So.
Yeah, I definitely hear you. So some comics podcasts focus on doing, you know, per issue or per graphic novel reviews. Some focus on talking to, you know, artists or writers. It sounds, what we talked about in pre-show, you guys are really kind of delve more into interesting tidbits in the history, complicated characters. Can you give me maybe some samples of stuff you guys talked about on your two proof of concept shows?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's looking at comics as an industry and as a history. So we kind of like take one big topic and try to follow it for, you know, as long as it's interesting and pull out, you know, historical tidbits and details. So the first one that we did to show that we could do it was about The Watchmen, which was, you know, we figured it was a nice popular concept. The TV show had just come out. There's renewed interest in it as a piece of intellectual property. And so we went all the way back to the beginning of Alan Moore's career. Talked about the, you know, what brought him to the point where doing something like Watchmen made sense, where he'd gotten the idea of raiding old comic book history and deconstructing it and, you know, bringing it forward to a modern day sensibility and storytelling style. So, you know, we talk about Marvel Man, we talk about, you know, how he brought it to DC in the first place. And his, you know, different efforts of like which comic book characters he was going to use, because before he created the Watchmen, it was originally going to be for the Crusaders, for the Archie Comics characters, and then for the Charlton Bullseye characters, both of which kind of got shut down as, you know, possible avenues for him before he could finally get the series done with you know, characters that he created himself. So we kind of walked all the way through that process and all of the different influences that got to creating it. And then at the end of the podcast, we also talk about how then Moore and DC kind of, you know, fell to poor terms and why the, you know, why the situation with the IP is as it stands. So,
yeah. Has there ever been a writer who got screwed quite as badly as Alan Moore in that deal?
Yeah. It's been tough. It's, you know, there's nothing to me, honestly, more entertaining than watching Alan Moore when he's upset about something, because he's the funniest person in the world when he's mad. Which is, you know, a terrible thing to say, because I don't want to see him mad all the time. But on the other hand, you know, he's hilarious when he is. So the joke was originally, before we saw the Watchmen TV show, that all it was going to be was 12 hours of, you know, construction crews tearing apart his house. Like, you know, like the beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide, right? It was just going to be. But then we actually saw it, and, you know, Watchmen was tremendous. The Watchmen TV show was great fun. And, you know, we all had to kind of admit that we were dead wrong in public slagging it before it happened. So,
well, I mean, it's there's been so much bad stuff. That's the Alan Moore and his beard. Yeah. You know, the Zack Snyder movie, and then the regrettable Before Watchmen comics. You know, there's reasons, good reasons to be skeptical about future Watchmen related content when Moore's not involved. So
absolutely.
Well, what'd you think?
Doomsday Clock didn't shatter your mind and get you all fired up about crapping all over a creator's intentions?
Right, exactly. Somehow.
Doomsday Clock had the effect of kind of finally prying me away from big events in the big two. I was still kind of lingering a little bit, but I just pretty much just reading around the margins now, like Squirrel Girl. And if DC publishes any funny comics, I'll read. Superman's Pal. I've been reading that one, and that's been
pretty fun. Yep.
Yeah. So, but
we made a point when, you know, when we were actually talking about it for the podcast, Tasker asked me if we were going to actually bring up all of the terrible, you know, post Watchmen comics, and we kind of like dismissed those in a sentence, right? We're just, you know, we don't even want to talk about that. That's not what this is here for.
So. I got a feeling that's what people are going to do when they write about them in years anyway,
right?
So, you know, talk about Watchmen, like, and there were some sequels that are best left forgotten. So yeah,
right.
So you guys are, you know, I almost compulsively want to ask you about the whole Alan Moore, Grant Morrison fight, but I almost feel like that's been overdone. So I don't know if you want to talk about that or not. It's the kind of thing you might want to cover, but maybe it's just, you know, everyone talks about that so much. I don't know if you'd want to.
Right. Like I said, it's not necessarily a topic, you know, that I have to. I mean, once again, I tend to be with Moore on it, in that I find Moore's descriptions of his interactions with Morrison to be hilarious. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's not the sort of thing we would do a podcast on. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, we had Dan Ebnett on a few years ago. Well, actually, we get him on about every 6 months because he's a nice guy, but he's gullible. And he comes on and gives us a patina of respectability. And the first time we had him on, I was like, so Dan, which camp are you in, Alan Moore or Grant Morrison? Because you're a British writer and you're bald, but you have a beard. Are you a double agent? Ooh. You go to both meetings? Or so it was kind of funny.
And did he manage to get out of it without copping out? Or?
Oh, Dan is a sparkling conversationalist and very witty. He said something very funny that I forget right now. And then we were off talking about Space Marines or Aquaman or whatever Dan's current project was. So speaking of strange things, you guys cover complicated characters like the Captain Marvel, Shazam, or the storied and tortuous history of Supergirl.
We like to take a character when we can and kind of like walk through, especially a character that, you know, has some weird legal history for it. That's kind of like a thing that that Tasker and I are both interested in as a topic, is, you know, kind of like the way the outside world affects, you know, the history of comic book publishing and the, you know, the influence of legal issues, of things that happen to the publishers, and how that winds up getting reflected in the fiction, right? And so Captain Marvel is one that absolutely fascinates me as a character, because the lawsuits that DC has gone through over the years dealing with this character, and all of their interactions with other publishers for it, is this fascinating Shaggy Dog story that just goes on forever. I mean, we had to go out of our way to cut that down to just an hour talking about it. So,
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Supergirl pre-show, and I brought that up just because, wow, that's a character with a really complicated history. Was that because of some legalities or just questionable creative decisions down the line, or?
Mostly creative decisions, or mostly, once again, contractual decisions, right? I mean, the thing, Supergirl's first kind of like mortal blow as a character is the arrival of John Byrne at DC after the crisis, right? Mm-hmm. As like part of his coming on board, he had a list of unreasonable demands that he brought with him to say, you know, before I take this deal writing Superman, here are the things that I want to change about Superman. And among them was Superman's the only guy who made it off Krypton, right? That's all he wanted. That was a key core part of his concept for the character. And DC, not really thinking about it and having just recently killed off Supergirl in Crisis, was like, okay, sure, that's fine. Now, Supergirl had been killed off in Crisis because she was already kind of a problematic character, and her history was already pretty complicated. But from that point on, once you had removed her from the story, from the universe for it, of course, the next writers after Byrne, the next kind of like creators came back, immediately wanted to put her back, and five different people had five different ways they wanted to bring her back. And because DC was not really kind of like tightly controlled editorially, all five of them wound up happening. And so you wind up with this incredibly complicated story of all of these different versions of Supergirl that have kicked around. There are other characters like that that aren't really as well known as Supergirl and don't have that popularity. But Hawkman, for example, is a nightmare character from all of the ways of, you know, like he's existed. Donna Troy is a nightmare character. Eventually, I'd like to get into a bunch of these and kind of like go just do histories of an interesting character who has just been messed with over and over again.
I wasn't going to mention Hawkman specifically because I thought it'd be unfair to be like, so what happened with Hawkman? Because good Lord, Jesus, what happened there?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And there's, you know, six or eight different versions of Hawkman, each of whom have something, usually at least something interesting about them. There's some kind of like merit to pretty much each one that gets told, but they're mutually contradictory. None of them actually work together. And so we keep trying to kind of like smash all of these character concepts into one character. And so at any given time, it's tough to, you know what anybody else that you talk to about Hawkman, what they think of as the character, right? Like what's the important part of the character to them? Well, that depends on when you were reading it, because he's been a completely different character over and over again, you know?
Yeah, I always thought maybe that was why Grant Morrison avoided him when he was writing JLA back in the 90s and brought on his own. He said he wanted a winged guy, but the current winged guy.
He was ordered not to bring back Hawkman at first.
Was he?
They weren't done. No, that's why he brought in Zoriel, was to replace Hawkman in the storylines that he wanted to do, was because he was under editorial at DC at the time said, we are still figuring out what we're going to do with new Hawkman. Don't use him for this stretch. I mean, it wasn't, you know, like they had they I'm not sure which plan they were working on at the time, but Morrison has said he was told he can't use him.
That's one character you always kind of figure, well, they have to reboot him someday and get a definitive version, but you know, it's been so many years where they really haven't. Maybe this is just,
well, now if you're not reading the current Robert Venditti series, they have done as good a job as possible about reconciling everything that's been done to the character.
Have they?
Yes.
Great. That's great to hear. I have not been following that one for it, but if it's good, I should totally pick it up. I've always loved Hawkman as a character.
Yeah, well, my current comic list is very, very, very small, but I've always been a great fan of Venditti's work, and his current Hawkman series has been a very, 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 very good read. And his way of reconciling all the past origins, it's something that works. It, you know, the continuity holds together as well as comic book continuity ever holds together.
Is that something you can give me a quick the elevator pitch on what his version is?
He is taking the reincarnation angle that's been there since, you know, the 1940s.
Sure.
And basically, he clears up the fact that not only does Carter reincarnate from life to life, he also reincarnates across time and space.
Right. Okay.
Because his soul is paying off a karmic debt.
Okay.
And one of the great resolutions, their early arc is he finally gets to see all his other selves, like when he was the Hawkman on Krypton before the explosion.
Oh, you cool.
know,
okay.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, and it ties in nicely with the Geoff Johns stuff where he was, the gunfighter Nighthawk.
Yes. With Cinnamon and stuff for it.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So it all ties together. It all counts. It all really was Carter.
Okay. I think I saw the final finale of that where he was fighting a bad guy in London and he yes. did this spell where he could manifest all previous incarnations at yes. once to have an army of Hawkmen from the ages.
See if I yes. when we do this episode, I'm going to have to catch up on that then because I'm at yeah. least 5 years behind on.
Well, you know, I'm not doing anything. If you need some help,
yeah, so sure.
I was able to find a graphic novel. I think Venditti is still writing it. Although I haven't picked yes. up the last couple of months, but so it's on Amazon. I'm sure it's on Comixology because that's.
Well, I will definitely catch up on it before I actually sit down to do an episode on it. So,
well, let me ask you about. One of my all-time favorite really messed up characters, if I can find the image I've got here, and that is not it. Sorry. Did not want to share that with you. Oops. Yeah. All right. Moon Knight.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well,
what's up with that guy?
That would, but once again, I am, you know, you've caught me off guard because I have not done the reading on him yet for it to actually do it, but I would love to do a full in-depth study of all of the different versions of him that have kicked around.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I the Warren Ellis version from a few years ago. Really, yeah. really enjoyed it, but it was, you know, a huge departure from everything that had come before.
Right.
I think I might actually.
It's those characters that tend to fascinate me, right? The ones that are just kind of like on the edge of mm-hmm. being a core important character, and those are the ones that kind of editorial dictates tend to kind of like say this character can be fixed. Right. It's like this character could be worth something to us as a company, as a piece of IP, if we could just straighten out these last couple of details. Mm-hmm. And some of them just resist doing that for decades at a time. Right. And it's, you know, their stories just become crazier and crazier and more convoluted and hard to follow. And it's frequently because of that I kind of fall for them. Right. It's all of the craziness in their background kind of like makes them more fascinating to me, even though it makes them much harder for, you know, any kind of like new fan to get attached to, right? So,
yeah,
you know, a great example of that.
When I wrote the history section for the original Eminem Golden Age book, when you start talking about costumes heroes, you have to start with Dr. Occult.
Right.
And you know, not only is he the first costume hero, he's the first example of a character that's not successful enough to really invest a whole lot into, but he's just successful enough to where you try to reinvent him.
Yes, over and over again. Right.
Yes, yes, and then that is a particular level of comic book purgatory for so many characters.
Talking about this guy here, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He was in Books of Magic from Neil Gaiman back in the day, right? Tim Hunter?
Among other things. Yeah. Yes.
Well, he's Siegel and Shuster's primary creation before Superman, right? Oh, so right there, he's carrying enough, you know, kind of like historical weight that you can't ever just dismiss him, you know? But on the other hand, he doesn't really make much sense as a character. So, you know, like we keep trying to like figure out a way that we can shoehorn him into whatever the editorial, you know, like plan for the line is at any given time. And, you know, this kind of this craziness just kind of like accretes to the character as it goes along. I mean, he's an 85-year-old character at this point now, you know.
Yeah. When do some of these guys, speaking of legalities and quirky characters and strange industry things, when do some of these guys, I mean, public domain, if people had been messing around with copyright laws, right?
Yeah, well, yes. I missed a chunk of what. Can you repeat the middle of the question there?
Oh, sorry about that. Okay. I just you mentioned that, you know, he's an 85-year-old character, and you right. know, back copyright was always what, 75 years?
It used to be, before yeah. Congress started messing with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before Disney owned Congress, people started messing with that.
Yeah. So I mean, Batman, Superman should both be public domain the same way Cthulhu is right now, but that's probably not sure. going to happen for
that. Will not more. That will not happen. No.
Yeah.
They won't allow it. Yeah. But on the other hand, you have characters that have been in and out of that at different times, right? And that's part of what makes them interesting. Part of what made the Captain Marvel thing interesting was the, you know, the uncertain legal status of Shazam Captain Marvel after DC won their lawsuit against Fawcett. So we did an entire episode about that and about DC's various legal efforts to defend Superman as a character and to, you know, eliminate competition in characters that were like too close of a ripoff of Superman. And the legal battle between DC and Fawcett over Captain Marvel for that is a 13-year legal fight, right? A lot of people don't realize how much went into that and what a kind of a core event this is in comic book history as far as kind of like establishing legal precedent within comic book publishing as far as, you know, like what could and couldn't be done with different characters. And that just goes on for, you know, endlessly, right? I mean, it just is this enormous battle. And in the end, you know, they wind up with, you know, Fawcett walks away because it's not worth the cost to continue defending him anymore. And Captain Marvel winds up basically in the public domain, effectively. Certainly the name and the copyright and you know, most of it winds up, you know, legally not owned by anybody, which is what allows Marvel to come in and swipe the name. So
yeah, it's kind of amazing to think that he was considered so valuable property people would fight legally for that for decades. But I mean, back in the day, he was selling more copies of comics than Superman was.
Absolutely. During the war, he was the number one selling comic book character, and the Marvel family as a set outsold the entire rest of DC's line besides Superman and Batman. Just the Marvel family comics.
A question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Now, the story that I have read for years is not that Captain Marvel became public domain from as a result of the lawsuit, but it fell into public domain because DC went 25 years or whatever it was without, or 20 years or whatever it was without doing anything with the character. And right. Yeah, well, and that,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, but yes, it's a little more complicated than that, but yeah.
Because there's no other way to because I spent a summer reading all of the Marvel Captain Marvel Marvel, and right. And you know, I've never seen a comic more clearly published to satisfy a lawyer in my life.
Exactly. Yep. And they weren't the first to do it, right? If you're familiar with the Myron Fass, the MF yes. Enterprises Captain Marvel, they, you know, not only did they you know, put out their own version of this relatively lame character in order to seize the name. They had to pay off Myron Fass to make him mm-hmm. stop doing it, you know, with his version, with the Splitzam version of it. And so Myron Fass winds up making in this deal $4,500 to never publish Captain Marvel again. That's literally what it cost them in 1968 to get rid of Myron Fass for it. And it's the most money he ever made off of one of his characters. Right, there, which is what makes him such a charming figure in comics for us, right? I mean, this poor guy is publishing.
There's a great indie comedy movie waiting to be made about the Fast publishing
right?
industry.
Absolutely, yes.
I keep thinking that, especially in an era of workplace comedies, getting behind the scenes on some of the comic industry decisions, or you know, seeing a facsimile of that on TV, because I'm sure if you guys looking at DC or Marvel last few years. It's hard not to just stop and stare and shake your head and go, why are they doing this? What are right. they thinking? What's the motive right. behind this decision?
Well, once again, frequently there is one, and it's frequently some sort of like comically bad business decision or legal decision or something like that that has led to it that winds up manifesting itself within the comics themselves, right? And so for most people who don't follow the backstories of this, they just are left with this weird, mysterious event in their favorite comic book, and it will always be a mystery to them. Why, you know, where did this character that I love go? Or why did they stop doing this? Or why did they change this? Why did they change Captain Marvel's name to Shazam? That doesn't make any sense. That why would you have a character who can't say his own magic, he can't say his own name without changing into a secret identity? That's ridiculous. But there is always a reason, right? Or almost always. And sometimes we can actually find out that reason. And that's kind of what the podcast is going to be about, is let's actually dig in and see what the crazy reasons for all of this are.
Okay, so the title is Explain This Comic, Guys. Look for
Explain
it on
this Podbean. Comic, guys. Yeah.
Look for it on Podbean or Podbean, which is where mm-hmm. our podcast is as well, or iTunes coming up in May, and also on the Democles Thread YouTube channel. Yep. And that'll be in just a couple of weeks. And while we're on the subject of quirky and comical comic book histories, you and Chris are on a shared project right now. Let me see if I can share the screen. There we go. As backer, I guess, for the Sentinel Comics role-playing game. You guys are writing the quirky and comical backstory of the completely imaginary fictional Sentinel Comics company.
To be fair, Chris has already done his part of this. Chris is finished. He's off the, you know. I mean, I'm sure at some point we'll bring stuff back to him to get, like, you know, approvals and probably get his advice, his sage advice on a couple of things. But he's done his word count for this. It's me and Bedell that are holding it up right now. So,
but I had far less to do. Don't dock yourself.
I don't know about that. Yeah. By total words, his stuff is hilarious. His chapters that he's turned in are great, and we love them dearly. But yes, we are doing, or we have been doing for some time now, as part of the Kickstarter for the Sentinel Comics RPG. We did a deal with Christopher Bedell and Adam to basically create a meta book about the setting. That the joke of it is that it's the publishing history of the fake publisher who published all of the comics that this game is supposedly based on, right? So all of the characters within the Sentinel Comics game, or within the original Sentinels of the Multiverse game, are characters who have their own comics that have been published for 80 whatever years. And this is the story of that publisher and the history of their entire universe. So we're revealing to the players of the RPG the backstory of the world that they're playing in by selling it to them as though they were about to play in a Marvel game or a DC game, and we're telling them the history of Marvel or DC as a publisher, right? And so the last quarter of the book is, in fact, an Overstreet price guide to collecting all of these comics that never existed, which is also serves as kind of like a, you know, a research point, like an information dump for the players about the history of the universe. Right, that's how we tell. That's the version that we tell them, so that they can figure out how things happened in their setting.
I would say it's inside baseball, but it's more like inside fantasy baseball.
Yeah, exactly. And it's an enormous book. It's going to be over 300 pages long, and it is filled with obviously with Professor and myself, writing it. It is filled with a bunch of inside baseball stuff about the history of comic book publishing as well, where we tell, you know, kind of like famous stories or not so famous stories about real things that happened in comic book history. And we credit them all to Sentinel Comics, right? Like, we change the history enough so that nobody gets, no legal action gets threatened or anything like that. And the whole time we spend making fun of Christopher and Adam with it, and they could not be happier. Right, like we keep going back to them and saying, "Is it okay if we tell this joke about you?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, no, make it worse, make us look stupider, please." In doing this, story. But they have just been a delight to work with on it. So, and all these other people that we've put in to support it as well. My favorite gags in the entire book are from Mike Selinker, who is, if you're familiar, is a world class, one of the greatest game designers in the world. And was a very early supporter and insisted that we name a character in the book after him. Mm. And so the character that we wound up assigning his name to is our Frederick Wortham, right? Is our guy who is, trying to shut down comics because they're obscene, and he's trying to get ahead in politics. He's actually running for Senate in Missouri. And once again, he can't be evil enough for Mike, right? Like, each time that we, like, you know, say he did some awful thing, Mike's like, "No, make it worse. There must be something funnier we can do to this character."
Nice. Well, I'm sure you guys can't say too much, as it's not published yet, and I'm sure there's NDAs and
great. Well, now if the people who have been lucky enough to go to YouTube and check out the amazing movies that Darren made about this, they've already got a taste of where we're going with this. So it doesn't have to be totally top secret, because, well, Darren has acted a lot of this stuff out already.
Exactly. Yes. Once again, with a bunch of the Double Exposure gang acting with me for it, but they've been they were a great help.
Okay, we need to get those links and put them in the show notes. People can check that out.
Absolutely, yeah.
The recreation of the campy 1960s Wraith TV show had me in stitches.
Good. I'm glad. Those were a lot of fun. We did that literally in one weekend.
That's amazing.
That all five episodes of it took us, 3 days of filming at the Morristown Hyatt and, various locations around it. And then Vinny and I just went back and, edited weeks to make it right.
Is that Sentinel Comics, The Untold Story?
Yes.
Yes.
On the Greater Than Games YouTube channel. Okay, I've got part four are. Here.
There should be five episodes, I think, of it. So.
Yep, I will get the links to all those in the show notes because it sounds like Chris is not an easy laugh. So if he's digging it, I'm sure it's worth checking out.
I'm a weird laugh.
Yeah. A weird laugh. So what was your favorite part of this to write, Chris? You've been kind of quiet so far.
Well, The whole project has been a dream from start to finish because Darren approached me about this after I was having some contretemps with a publisher and was feeling that maybe I wasn't that good of a writer after all. And then he just pitched me this incredible dream project where we've been treated like kings from the start. We've been paid like kings. It's been every wonderful thing that could possibly happen to you on a writing project has happened on this one. I could not have asked for a better coworker. I could not have asked for more creative freedom. It was just like this. It was a dream come true, huge karmic payback. It's just been wonderful from start to finish. And that put me in such a great space to write this thing. But I think my favorite part of writing it is we had this idea. I had this idea from the start that like all mid-century comic book publishers, the actual publisher, the actual business guy, the one who owns the building and whatnot else has to be like this, like low level chiseler, just sleazy, sleazy guy. The more I wrote him, it's like with every draft, he got more sociopathic than the one before. But like
still charming, right? Like we still like him, right?
Yes,
that's the funny part of it is the worse he gets, the more entertaining he is.
Yes. And he's one of that all too common breed that like he thinks he's fooling everybody, but like is fooling no one, but still manages to get away with some pretty horrible things.
Right.
And I think when Darren and I evolved the name Sir Douglas St. John Dewberry III, everything clicked and everything sort of flowed from that. And so by the time that we had people trying to blow up the building for their badger god or, the other things we were able to work into this, it was just a complete and utter joy. And I'm so anxious for
when you watch the video, the guy trying to blow up the building, of course, is our Alan Moore character. And when you watch the video, it's the guy playing him in under that beard is, in fact, Kurt Covert. the board game designer, and he's the funniest thing in the world. He was terrifying people with his costume and his badger puppet and everything. He was horrible to everybody else on the staff, and it could not have been funnier the whole time.
So. His puppetry alone.
I don't know where we found that badger puppet either. For it, somebody found dime store. But
so you have a badger god as your analog for Alan Moore's snake god.
Snake god, yes, exactly. Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Guy Hampton is the name of the character, and he is in fact our Alan Moore character. And eventually, he and Sentinel part ways over his insane religion, and he decides to kind of Guy Fawkes the entire building. So.
Yeah, this came about when I was sitting in the hallway at work, supposedly having to check call passes, and I think one of the magical moments in my life is where just sitting there watching these freshmen cut up in the hallway, just going, "Badgers are funny." There you go. It seemed like everything clicked from that.
Right. The story before that, I mean, when we set up the company in the first place, Sentinel Comics is created by this guy who is marrying into a mob family. And he's fallen in love with like this mafia princess. And so his father-in-law, the guy who's like the actual head of the mafia, needs to give him a job. But he's not really enough of a tough guy to be a mobster. So he gives him the job of handling... the newsstands, the newsstand business in St. Louis. And so he collects all the dimes from the, you know, from the newspaper kids for this, because those are, that's the level of, you know, menace, is that he can, you know, he is capable of being tough enough to not get robbed too much by the 10-year-olds who are selling newspapers. And so he winds up, you know, through a series of ridiculous events, owning a couple of newsstands, and then owning a printer that was doing pulp magazines, and turns it into a comic book publisher. And so he kind of accidentally creates an entire superhero universe that then goes on, you know, 80 years in the future, is the number one superhero, you know, number one comic book publisher in the world. Because of course, in this world, DC and Marvel, et cetera, don't exist, right? This is the, you know, the Sentinel universe, where Sentinel Comics is in fact the number one comic producer, but it does have rivals. It does have, you know, other companies out there, and every other company is based on another superhero game RPG publisher. So there's a version of Hero, and there's a version of Green Ronin, and there's a version of Jeff D, and a version of, you know, Palladium, and everybody else. They're all, you know.
You guys are parodying your own industry inside this.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's there are nested, you know, like jokes within jokes. In jokes within entire thing. So
yeah, definitely an incident or two taken from some things that may or may not have happened in the game industry.
Yeah.
There's a lot to parody there. as you probably saw, I was digging up the Greater Than Games Kickstarter page for this project on the share screen here. And I guess our timing is lucky, because Chris Bedell is saying delivery is happening very soon.
Yes, on the core rulebook, absolutely. Which means we're next in line to, you know, get start getting pushed through. So yes.
Okay, so you guys, your material is not in the core rulebook. You're in.
We are the next book that comes out after the core book. This is they've had the quick start and stuff out for
a year and a half, two years now, almost
for it. And then bit by bit, as they come completed stuff from the core book, some core book material has gone out to the Kickstarter backers. Okay. But this will be, this coming next month or two, the actual core book hits store shelves in fully complete material. And then they will start doing the, you know, line of supplements, and we are basically supplement number one.
So. Okay. So maybe we see the PDF for you guys by Christmas time?
Oh, I would actually, there, so. I'll be hung up if it's not sooner than that.
Yeah, well, at last report, our book's not going to be PDF.
Our book's a big, thick collector, you know, hardcover. Okay.
All right, so if people want to read this history, they got to get the Dead Tree version. Good to know. All right. Yeah. Well, hey.
It would be tough to manage this as a PDF. Well, I guess you could for it, but I mean, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be, you know, like I said, it's an Overstreet guide for a big chunk of it. And Price Guide, I think, would be hard to read in PDF.
Fair enough. Well, I'm guessing some of the offset printers are probably closed down in China.
Well, that's part of the situation that's holding everything up. You know, we had a schedule in place that looked pretty good in February. And that's all kind of gone into a cocked hat. And then on top of that, the project manager for this book in specific got pregnant. And is on maternity leave right now. So some things have been delayed because of that. But we are promised that as soon as she returns to the office, we are project number one for her. So,
all right. Well, perfect. Sounds good. Well, hey, I need to get back to my soul-deadening corporate job and this laptop over here. Darren, it's been a pleasure talking to you again, sir. Thanks for coming back.
Absolutely. Always a delight. Happy to come on anytime.
Chris, appreciate you co-hosting. Thanks a lot, sir. Always nice talking to you as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Always great to be here.
And I just to make sure we shout it out one more time, it's going to be the Explain This Comic Guys podcast on Podbean, iTunes, and the Damocles Thread channel on YouTube. You will check it out in hopefully a couple weeks, first week of May or so. So keep your eyes out for it.
It's probably at mid-May. We're not going to make the first week for it. We're still recording. So
okay. So
we want to have five or six in the can before we actually hit the public with it. So
hey, makes sense. All right. Well, thanks again. And thanks to all our viewers. We'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.